fights where like he'd be yelling at me for, this, like, it was hard. It was frustrating for them, I'm sure, to see that me upset, crying, no idea why. I remember one time I took a, those pull-up bars that have reverse
Oh,
tension?
yeah,
So I
absolutely.
used it to lock my door against a bed. And my dad was also a triple black belt at karate, so he just kicked my door
Kick
down.
it,
And, so I remember there were a few instances like that where there was a fear, but also I had this respect because he was so good at everything, right? And so, he wasn't just a scary guy. He never hit me. He never was like, physical, but he was very present.
Did you ever have a fight?
You mean, did I ever
A fist
fight
fight?
with my dad?
No,
Oh yeah.
at school.
Oh yeah. I remember the first fight I remember. Actually, no, my dad always reminds me of this fight. So my dad put me in karate starting when I was six. And he always tells this story, my brother was too, how we were at Paul Revere and high school and at a soccer game, and they look over and there's these older kids, I guess, who were picking on us. And my dad sees it happening like across the field. And he comes walking over, and by the time we get over there, my brother and I had these kids in chokeholds, and they're like, "Get these kids off! These are fucking crazy." But the real first fight I had, I remember my dad got me a Red Saturn. I was very proud of my Red Saturn, even though other people made fun of me for it. It was peppy, a little five
Yeah,
speed. I
five
remember I
speed, yeah.
pull up next to this M3, and I'm revving in Beverly Hills, and I had a bunch of friends in the car because I was one of the earlier guys to drive in my class, and I go ahead of them, and I kind of remember we were pulling into a deli, and they're like, "Oh, the deli's there," and I kind of cut them off, not meaning to. I go park, friends go running inside, and I get out. Oh, and I remember the back of the BMW had UCLA bodybuilding on the back sticker, and these three guys walk up to me, and they're like, "Hey, you the guy in the red car?" And the thing is, nobody had seen a Saturn back then, so a lot of people were asking me what it was, and I'm like, "Yeah." Bam! I mean, front, back, left, right. I mean, and I was the guy from the parking lot. Came running out. He's like, "You okay?" He's like, "That was so loud, it was reverberating in the parking
Oh,
lot." And
wow.
so I remember I went home and I told my dad, I'm like, "Yeah, I got beat up." And he's like, "What happened to karate?" I was like, "I don't know, just kind of." So he made sure I never got beat up again. He was like, "We're gonna go, we're gonna spar and get back at that." So yeah, then I never lost a fight after that.
That sounds like a scene out of Back to the Future or something like
It was bad. I was
that,
like, I just remember hitting it on the ground, my head's ringing, and I'm like, "What hit me? What do I know about Hollywood? Like, I'm a fun guy." And he's like, "Listen," because all these, like I said, my investors were the who's who in Hollywood. They would bring things that they thought would be good investments to me, and I'd kind of tear them apart or decide to invest in them. And he's like, "I've watched you with media deals and this and that. Like, you know more about this finance stuff than," and at the time, nobody in Hollywood had finance. So I'm like, "Listen," the funny part is the only thing my parents ever said to me is, "You can do anything you want with your life. You can be a trash man. Just be the best trash man you can be. But you can't go into Hollywood."
they didn't want
They're
you in.
like, because my uncle was a producer and his life kind of got really family life and stuff. It was very hard. Just Hollywood's a tough
Right,
place.
it's tough.
And they didn't want that life for me. So he's like, I'm like, "And I don't know anything about Hollywood." And he's like, "Look, I need you to write a business plan or help me like raise this money and buy this company." And I was like, "Well, so you want to do an MBO?" I still remember him saying, "No, I don't want to get my MBA." I was like, "No, a management buy." I was like, "Never mind." I was like, he goes, "I'll pay you 50 grand." I was like, "Done." Needed the money really bad.
Needed the
So
money.
wrote the business plan, ran him through it. I raised the money. We bought the company. I owned a big piece of it with him. And then the next crazy thing that happened was the first movie in there was a little movie that had been developed called 300. And it was a graphic novel that Frank Miller had made. And Mark had helped him negotiate a deal at Warner Brothers. And it was kind of a first look deal. And I remember his lawyer was a guy named Jake Bloom, who also recently passed away. He was the most powerful lawyer in the business. You wanted something done, you went to Jake. I mean, the joke was, because Jake used to let me in the inside, he'd be like, he'd represent the producer, the studio head, the actor,
Oh,
the
yeah.
director, but he'd say, he'd call all of them and just say, "Okay, we negotiated for 5 days and here's where we ended up, okay?" One
Quick.
phone call, because he was representing all of them,
Represent
right?
everybody.
So I remember we went into Warner Brothers and Mark made me his guy. He's like, "You're my business guy now." And I did all his business. So I actually launched Relativity, had to come up with a name. And I said, "I manage producers." nobody had managed producers. And I'm like, I want to manage producers. So I managed, Mark was my first producer, and I owned 10%, I think, of Atmosphere. So anything business, he brought me into. And went into Warner's and pitched Alan Horn, who was the head of Warner's at the time, on 300. And I remember Alan looked and goes, let me get this straight. You guys want to make a movie, Sword and Sandals, R-rated, blood, you call it comic blood, yes, with the guy that nobody knows who was Phantom of the Opera, because Jerry Butler at the time was the guy behind the mask. That's a period piece for $60 million. And I was like, I remember Mark was like, well, I was like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what we're saying. And so he just starts laughing. I remember we walk out and Jake Blum, Mark's lawyer, came, looked and he said, I said, I'm going to get this movie made. And Mark, to his credit, had put together this 2-minute animatronic almost, because at the time you didn't really have previs, that just showed this vision that was so good. And it's, do you remember the scene where the arrows are all come flying in and just covers? It was that 1-minute scene. I'm like, I got to get this made. And Jake Blum said to me, it was, Jake Blum says, this movie will get made when pigs fly. So, you know, there's a lot of science and metaphysics and religion have kind of all started to converge in an interesting way. And we know that there's a field that connects us all, quantum entanglement.
Right.
And so we know that things go faster than the speed of light, even though that's completely impossible. It means that we're connected by something we can't see. I think we used this analogy before, which is like we're in an ocean.
Right.
We're like fish in an ocean. We just don't know. Right. So I actually believe that, and I firmly believe this, and this might get a little voodoo-y, but, and I was like the person that, you asked me when I was 25, I'm like, oh, I'm an atheist. I don't really, you know, mumbo jumbo. I was like very science. I was very like, we're born, somehow, you know, chemicals came together. We were, you know, it worked. Mm-hmm. It was a one-time event. We're going to die and that's it. Not anymore. I actually feel and believe very firmly that there is a field. And Einstein believed this, to a unified field, call it, but a field that connects all of us, all living things. I'll call it the heaven, the earth, the stars, the moon, the people, the animals, the plants. And yoga is a way of tapping into it. And there's multiple ways of tapping into it. But it's tapping into various parts. And I think you go back to like the old yogis where they have, you know, your various, points, but your chakras or whatever you want to call
chakras,
it.
Eight chakras.
But it's different points in your body that I think actually are those points that somehow physically, or I'll call more metaphysically, are connected to the universe. And as we explore more and more in science and medicine, we're actually realizing that is happening. You know, there is this gland here, the pineal gland, and it does look like an eye. Like when you go pull it out, it is made of the same material as an eye, and it calcifies. So the older you get, the more it calcifies.
Yeah.
And if you can figure out how to get oxygen in there, it decalcifies. We don't know what the pineal gland does. Like we still don't know what its purpose is, right?
Mm.
And I mean, we know some of it, obviously,
right.
But it's we know so little about the way that energy moves through us and how it connects to everything else. Like, do you know, we don't know what 98% of the universe is made up of. We can't see it. 98%. We only see 2% of what's around us, right?
Yeah, it makes it interesting.
So I believe that yoga, that meditation, that even, you don't have to call it that even, but that looking inside and finding that's that inner voice, that inner strength that sometimes comes from nowhere.
Right.
And it comes from everywhere.
Right.
You know?